전부 세니 마사지 미스테
나모
구로메 나모 빌라야 나모 라마야 나모 상가
Shabbat shalom.
Nya da ya me sang je che do so je cho na ma la sa jo ban do da ne sa so che na ge je ju de be so nam je ro ye be je so je nyen do ba rai cho sang je che do so je cho na ma sa jo ban do da ne sa so che Da ge chu ju ge be so nam je lo la wa pe she song je ru pa ra so sang an je chu da ma zu je chu na ma la sha ju pa do da ne sa su je da ge chu ju ge be so nam je lo la wa pe she song je ru pa ra so Manas, Majina, Tatani, Bissangi, Tangi Tondo, Pozalana, Mavayanda, but Zubi Sanji, Kumbor, Majin, Toba Shago, Eight Toba Shavi Cheto, Tambichur, Majin, and Begono, and you just same, say Simbigon and Sambrishon.
Let us all cultivate the altruistic motivation seeking complete enlightenment. For the sake of liberating infinite, kind, mother sentient beings, and with that kind of bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching.
Tangaranso, any chuchini shabalata, any lama to homanik tony, a kuno nabataba, tik tik gurging about the gurgers.
As we participate in spiritual teaching, such as the one we are having now, it is absolutely necessary for both the teacher and the students or disciples to cultivate proper motivation. We should all participate in the teaching with proper intention or motivation. It is stated in sutra that a teacher or guru who gives teaching should do so with proper motivation. And it's mentioned that a teacher should teach with literally translating undiluted or non-diluted motivation. So in other words, his or her motivation must not be contaminated by any delusion to give the teaching. And so with such a pure motivation, teachers should teach correctly or unmistakenly. In other words, as the teacher explains the meaning of a dharma, he must make sure that he does not give misinterpretation or wrong interpretation. So must give the what we call unmistaken explanation.
That thing is that training king is that training king is that any certain thing is that Cindy Togu Thompson is that any Tom Hinder is that any you must be want to make some mistake you must want to make some mistake. Rantan yinji tuandu, sanji goba toya chidu nyung, nyi sama tani kinga gugari.
So just as a teacher needs to teach with pure motivation, pure in the sense that his or her motivation is not contaminated by delusion and must not teach out of worldly motives, concerned with this lifetime, and teach properly or correctly, in the same way, those who listen to teaching should also listen with pure, undiluted or non-diluted motivation. In other words, that listeners to teaching must not listen to teaching out of some ulterior motives. You know, something like that has to do with the interest of this lifetime. You know, how can I become famous, you know, in this life? Or, you know, how can I be successful in, making basic necessities of life? So one's motivation must not be contaminated by any delusion. And the proper motivation and the highest kind of motivation that we emphasize here is the altruistic motivation, bodhicitta motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the benefit of others and oneself. So with that kind of bodhicitta motivation, that both teacher and students should participate in teaching.
Then yeah, that chance of how tired was any tandem the lambrugnal nation some pang ni nyen pa tan zo nation some nation some pang the heat to ten nyen go do was.
I assume that you already know about what is the proper approach to listen to teaching. And what that approach involves is that listeners should be free of, metaphorically speaking, the three faults of a container or a pot. Okay? The three faults of a pot or container, and also adopt six types of recognitions, dushe too, you know. So being free of three faults of a container or a vessel and cultivating the six types of recognitions, that is the proper approach with which one should listen to spiritual teaching.
That can be transferred.
So you may have heard, about these matters already, but what I want to emphasize is that so you should remember them. You know, don't forget what you have already listened to or learned about. So it's important for us to be able to bring these things in, on our mind, if you will, as we listen to teaching.
Mm-hmm. Then Ranlan never type the heat the yayat patient which child was risk on once.
As I explained the other day, that of the six types of what we call recognition, seeing oneself as if one were a sick person, you know, literally translating, as if one is a patient, needs medication. That kind of recognition is very important.
That wrong la neba ta bin du chi ti yakwa chi ngune thoni ge pe san no khor ri na ta ani chue la me chi du chi ya de ki ani ta yakwa chi ngur is.
So if we recognize or have this kind of recognition as if I am like a patient or on somebody who needs some medication, if that kind of understanding or awareness or recognition is there, then what follows from that is that I really need medicine-like teaching. Okay, so that somehow automatically follows from the first kind of awareness or understanding or recognition.
Ani neli thaya ga che do men za chim zing ge de na yi ge de ng ran zo ge de che de ta za chim bo de ge chim bo yin bo de ge ba de ha ko yong ge.
So just as a patient who really feels that I'm really not feeling well, I'm sick, so I need medication, so such a patient really understands the value of medication, that I really need to get the right medicine and I need to take it, okay, in order to get well. So in the same way, if we were to recognize ourselves as if we were a patient, And so then we will be able to regard Dharma or teaching as the real medication, and we need to apply the teaching to ourselves, which is like taking the medication to recover from sickness. So as we see the value of teaching, just as a patient sees the value of medication, then I think, relatively speaking, we will be able to cope with any difficulties in search of teaching, you know, to find or to listen to teaching. So when we really truly feel or recognize how precious Dharma is, just like a medication, then I think somehow that helps us to cope with difficulties that we encounter in search of Dharma, right? So in order to find a Dharma, now who really can give us authentic Dharma teaching, in order to find such a qualified teacher, we may face difficulties, but we will be able to put up with the difficulties because we have this understanding or recognition that Dharma is really very precious and is very valuable. So it is in this regard, remember that I told you about the story of great Bodhisattva Sadaparutida, ever-crying Bodhisattva, who went in search of his teacher, Acharya Dharmodgata, you know. So just as his name says it, you know, he was always found crying. So that's, he was called ever-crying Bodhisattva. That's his name. You know, Sadaparutida means always crying. So, of course, we have to understand what is the reason behind, why he is always crying. It's not like he's always depressed and sad and crying, you know, but that's a really good reason why he is always found crying. So the reason behind his crying all the time is, you know, he realized the value of the wisdom gone beyond, or the realization of emptiness. Okay, and so he was really, he very much wanted to find a qualified teacher who can teach him what emptiness is, you know, who can teach him about the perfection of wisdom, Pranjana Paramita. So he was really in search of such a teacher, and because of that deep realization of the value of such a, such an antidote, so he was always found crying, you know.
That is when he used to say, "That Sanjay Chomdi did that change your eyes. Just that change, ane."
So he was always found crying because he was really, in a sense, like a desperate, you know, to find an authentic teacher who could teach him emptiness, show the perfection of wisdom. So then what happens was one day, you know, there was some kind of a voice from the sky. I mean, that actually the Buddha, you know, produced that voice because Buddha knew what he really was seeking. And the voice said, you know, don't be sad. You know, you should go in the direction of the east, and you will find a qualified teacher, you know, who could teach you the perfection of wisdom.
I think that same 아니 최등기가 아니 최등기 기회신이 되게 생일 가르치고요나 동시에 가발 교육이었는데 때때 휴지 마시잖냐 그 동네 때때 때까지 휴지 마시 때 라고 말했잖냐 동네네 아 교육하랬어
So when we first heard that voice from the sky saying, you know what, don't be sad, just go, keep walking in the eastern direction and you will find a qualified teacher. So he was so happy and delighted and he just, you know, walked into that particular direction. But then on the way, then he started to feel again sad. He said, you know what, I missed the opportunity to ask teacher, what would be the name of that teacher, you know? And what is his, so to speak, the address, location? I did not ask those things. So I have no name, I have no address. So, I mean, would I really ever be able to find a teacher just going into that direction? So he was again sad.
You know? Tele ane give him chempas yogaris. And those in the Yamalong tenor.
So then as he was kind of asking those questions in his mind, right, again his questions got answered, you know, with a voice from the sky. He said, the name of the teacher would be Acharya Dharmodgada, Kyachoba. And the location where you could find him is called Pyongyedang. Of course, now that's the Tibetan translation of the Sanskrit name, but which seems like the town or the location has a very sweet fragrance. So it's like almost like sweet fragrance, town.
That is your compare. An tene nda ta pa pe ni ane ta chenpa yusa ki ta chondu ki ta kan zhongxie ki din lebe.
So he kept walking and walking and finally so he came came to that particular location, you know, called sweet fragrance or, you know, just literally translating. And so he came to that very place where the great master Acharya Dharmodgada, you know, was present.
Ta tene ni pa meli kagi zema to
So he really got to the right location, right? And that it was almost as Geshe-la was saying, like maybe a few miles away from really literally meeting the great master. But now he got sad. He said, you know, I have nothing to offer. You know, if I see this teacher, I'm just empty hand and I have nothing. Now what do I do?
Then Kong that Tang Lun the Tat Shia Toma Mepane Chuk then that San Ton Shunya Maris. Lun the Sony. And the ring the and that I send you some chimpali chop appear the tendition. She goes some time and then missing you that. Tolang paru, songkang tadi tangan tadi paru ya setas, salang paru ni ta, misunyo gims, kejadian juger.
So then he realized, okay, I'm in the right location, and pretty soon I will be able to see the great teacher, but I have nothing to offer him. So then he thought, okay, he had nothing else except himself, right? So then he said, okay, maybe I can sell a part of my body, you know, if anybody need it. So he started to kind of like, you know, howl to the people of the town. So he said, anybody is interested in buying a human being? Yeah. So he just kept, you know, just howling that anybody interested to buy a human being?
You know.
So of course he thought how he decided to kind of sell himself, his body, if anybody was going to buy. He said, you know what, I had been reborn many times, but I never did once, you know, sacrifice my body for the sake of Dharma. So he has a chance. So he was ready to sell his body if anybody is interested in buying a human being. So then he thought he could get the money or whatever to buy offering for his teacher. But he just kept on announcing, what he has got to, you know, sell, but nobody was interested in buying it. Now he became really sad. He said, you know what? I must be really a person with very little merit. You know, nobody is interested to buy. You know, very unlucky, very unfortunate person. You know, I wanted to sell my body, sell myself, but nobody is interested to buy me. So I have no way to make an offering to my teacher. So then, you know, because nobody in that town was interested to buy a human being or a part of a human being. And but at that time, it is said that Indra, the king of gods, you know, he was watching all the way through, right? So he thought, okay, maybe he wanted to help him. So Indra appeared himself in the form of a Brahmin, right? And he came to him and said, you know what, I'm a Brahmin, so I don't need your flesh because, you know, I don't eat meat, right? I'm pure Brahmin. But I do need some human flesh to do a sacrificial ritual or rite. Yeah, so I would like to buy, you know, a part of your body. So, of course, ever-crying Bodhisattva was very delighted. You know, at least he found somebody who wants to buy a piece of him. And so he started to cut, you know, flesh from his, you know, thighs and wherever he could in order to, you know, sell. So when ever-crying Bodhisattva was doing that, literally cutting flesh from his, you know, body, a daughter of a merchant or business, you know, person in today's language, was watching from the rooftop of her, you know, building, and she saw the, what he was doing. So the girl came down, you know, to see him, and she was really interested. She said, you know, why you are doing a self-torture here, you know, torturing yourself? And so then he explained, he said, what, you know, I came all the way here to meet with a great master, Acharya Damodgada, and I wanted to get teachings from him, but I have nothing to make an offering for the teaching. So this Brahmin is interested to buy, you know, some part of me for sacrificial rites. So I'm so happy. Yeah, you know, I have this chance to do it. So that's what I'm doing, cutting flesh from my body to sell to this Brahmin. So then the girl was really, I mean, very much impressed by his sense of sacrifice and dedication, Bodhisattva, ever-crying Bodhisattva. And she said, you know, please stop, you know, doing that to yourself, and don't worry about making offering to your teacher. What, you know, I will ask my dad, you know, to kind of arrange for that, or, you know, because my dad is a very rich, you know, businessman. And as a matter of fact, you know, she turned out to be belong to a very rich family. You know, there were said, you know, 500 maids to serve her. So she said, you know what, I would like to come with you to get the teaching, if that's okay. And so we will make the offering, and so you don't have to worry about that.
And then that transit to a judging transit to a shady or to a shiny, then I'll need to go to a judging. And try to pay kunlo de namba ta bare endu mi ta ga yong bi nis ta churan kunlo de namba ta bare ge che san so ni san ta churan le kar gu na nga le ne chol ho chi ta karan kar gu na ti churan ge nga le love so
So then when that whole conversation took place, then the Indra, the king of gods, he showed his real nature. You know, he just turns from the Brahmin back into Indra. He said, you know what, I really don't need your flesh. You know, I just, I came to test your determination and your motivation. You know, you really had pure motivation and completely dedicated. So that's what I came to test. You know, I really, I'm not a real Brahmin and I don't need your flesh. And so now I'm convinced by your pure motivation or your sense of dedication. So ask me whatever you want, you know, to present to your teacher, and I'll provide it, you know, to you.
That conche the then here the position, but then that he celebrate. That thing is that to my tell him, but it's teacher and the she carries a cargo in a lab that in a shambles.
So then somehow the ever crying Bodhisattva, you know, he. Said, ask me anything you want, right? Then he said, okay, can you teach me something about the perfection of wisdom? And the Indra said, no, that's not something I can do. You know, just ask me any other things I can provide for you. You know, that's the thing I can't give you. So he already cut, you know, pieces of flesh from himself. He said, you know what, okay, if you can't do that, so why don't you restore my body to the normal, you know, body that I had before, you know. So then that would be your help.
That judging the end of journey, Frank, couldn't the Nabataka in the Takana, you know, you said, that was Chabrata.
So then Indra, you know, by using the what we call invoking the power of truth, he said, if you had a pure motivation, which I thought you had, so by the power of that truth, may, you know, you recover, you know, back to your normalcy. Before, and he invoked the power of the truth, and then the ever-crying Bodhisattva was back to normal, you know. And his body was recovered completely. So then the next day, that rich, you know, girl, I mean, she arranged herself like 500 chariots of offerings and followed by 500 maids, you know. So this whole entourage went with ever-crying Bodhisattva the next day to see the great teacher, Acharya Damodgada. So of course, then cut short the story. So they all met the great teacher Acharya Damodgada, and he gave teaching. And because of that whole pure motivation and the karmic connection for many lifetimes, that by listening to Acharya Damodgada's teaching, I mean, he really gained realization very quickly. The ever-crying Bodhisattva knows. So after giving some teachings to them, then Acharya Damodgada, he entered into a very deep meditative state for 1 week. So he completely absorbed himself into a meditative state. And then somehow from above, some voices came as if making an announcement. He said, you know what, pretty soon the great master Acharya Damodgada will come out of his deep meditation and then he will give teachings. So now they were all very happy because pretty soon this great master will be out of his deep state of meditation and he would give teaching. So they were preparing for the teaching where they need to kind of settle the dust down. So usually, I mean, in those ancient times is you bring water and, you know, sprinkle water, settle dust down. But for some reason, it is said the Maras, or in English, for lack of better word, I mean, proper words, we call demons or, you know, the demonic forces, they didn't want teachings to happen. So somehow they used their power, and as if all the waters were not available, just disappeared, you know.
That's
So when the Maras or the demonic forces used their power as if to sort of, how should I say, that nobody could see where the water is, you know. So then the ever-crying Bodhisattva, in order to challenge that, he said, okay, it doesn't matter. If you kind of take control of the water, I still have blood in my body. So I'm going to squeeze out the blood from my body and settle the dust down. I mean, that's how he really thought about it, you know, strong, how should I say, willpower, and with pure motivation, you know, he thought about it.
And then the
Okay, I think there needs to be a little correction. I think when he went there with the rich girl and the 500 maids and all of them, I think they didn't get the teaching right away because the great master was in deep meditation. So they had to wait 1 week. And then there was this voice announced from the above said, you know, he will pretty soon come out of meditation. And so they were so delighted and they arranged for the teachings. And now the great master was out of meditation, and then he gave teaching on the wisdom gone beyond, or the perfection of wisdom. So it is said that when the great master Damodgatha started to give teaching on the wisdom gone beyond, the ever-crying Bodhisattva was so ready for the teaching that in one particular session, they said somehow he progressed so fast on the spiritual ground that he pretty much accomplished 7 spiritual grounds of a Bodhisattva in one session, you know. So that was just a tremendous realization that he experienced. And I told this story is so that, of course, we don't have the same pure motivation and the dedication and the sense of willpower like Bodhisattva Sataparudita. But at the same time, in the story, the lesson we learned from this story is that to be able to realize, appreciate the preciousness or the value of spiritual teaching. And this story... it's found in the 8,000 Pranjanaparamita Sutra, if you look in that. Or there is 100,000 verses Pranjanaparamita Sutra, and there's a particular chapter called the chapter on, Bodhisattva Sataparudita. Okay, so you will find the story about him. So as we have this wonderful saying in Tibetan, which I don't think I can do justice to capture all the profundity and the beauty of the whole expression, but maybe I can capture the meaning here, is that the life stories of the great past masters, including the Buddha, are actually constitute practice for us, You know, their life is something that we need to cultivate, you know, constitute practice for us, because their life story is full of spiritual teachings or lessons for us to be put into practice. So the story which I told you is also related to one of the six recognitions that we as listeners to teaching should cultivate, which is recognizing our teacher as if he were an expert doctor or physician, right? So we have that regard. Just as, you know, we appreciate the expertise of a doctor if we are sick and we need good medication, in the same way, we have that kind of regard for a teacher. So one of the recognitions is to do with just as like if we are really sick, we need to take the medication consistently for whatever the time, you know, until really medicine works and kicks in and we get, you know, recovered. In the same way, we should have that sense of regard as we apply teaching to ourselves. There has to be consistency in applying the teaching to ourselves until we recover from, so to speak, a sickness of delusions.
Neba tala payments. Neba metagris, me sagurmato, me yendi jebat sanchi digamarabas. The Nangiris, and I'll secure the twin and digam, twibat sanchi digamari, twin yamsal and gofaris.
So we really need to listen to teaching in order to understand. But then, more important thing is we need to apply the teaching to ourselves or cultivate the teaching. Okay, that's the most important thing. And there's this really profound, message captured in A Guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life by Great Shantideva. And he gives this wonderful example. He said, if somebody is sick, what use it is if you kind of read the medical text to this person and tell him all the expertise you have in the medicine area? That's not going to do anything to the patient. What can really help the patient is if you give the medicine and the patient takes the medicine, and that's what works. So in the same way, so just as reading medical texts and having a medical expertise alone is not a cure for the sickness, the real cure for the sickness is medication that one needs to take. In the same way, so we need to apply the teaching to ourselves. We need to practice it. If we don't practice it, it is like we just read about things, but we are really not taking the medication. So I remember I'm explaining these things to you before, but because I have a translator today here, so I thought these are so important things, and maybe I will be able to communicate you know, better, so I just, you know, re-explained these things. It is really clearly stated in the text here, in the Lamri. It says, you know, if somebody, you know, can say that, you know, I have received so many teachings, you know, 100 teachings, it's just you can kind of, catalog it. I heard this one, I heard that one, I listened to this one, and then if somebody can make a whole laundry list of the teachings received but never practice it, then he said it really doesn't serve the purpose.
Yoruba. that dinang chal gyo res parang ro ten de nyeng ge ro de mara ba she ni ani ta shimbal ngam de yo ba ti ti sim ba shin ta ni zom chal gyo res.
So we talked about this example before. I don't know whether I really was able to get the message to you then. Now, it is like if you don't practice it, it is like somebody wants to taste the sugar cane, but only, you know, how she says, bites into the bark of a sugar cane, the skin one. Yeah, you get a little sweet taste because the bark has some sugary in it. But you are really not getting the real taste of the sugar cane, which is inside the skin or the bark. So like that, if we listen to teaching, yeah, we do enjoy it, you know, like it. But if we don't put into practice, so we are really not getting the real taste of the teaching.
Then don't listen to what happens when don't listen. Prang hinshu leta prang rod himbo te yo mares. Imes garis ron na na dus hinshu le prang shungba shungba te yo mares ta den du nyeja gro te wa te ni nang le yo res kana no.
So this example is actually, you know, comes from originally from a Buddha sutra, and there's a sutra called Paksam Kulva Do. The sutra is more like the, it is the motivational sutra that motivates you and inspires you, you know, about Dharma. So I'm just using the word. It may not work well. It's like a motivational speaker. So it's a motivational sutra here. That's my sense here. And so this sutra really gives this example. If somebody wants to get the real taste of sugar cane, then got to get into the skin of the sugar cane or the bark of the sugar cane. If you just keep biting the bark, you get a little bit of taste, but you really don't get the real taste of the sugar cane. Mm. So just like that, if you don't practice Dharma, listen to teaching, we get some enjoyment and satisfaction, but we don't get the real taste of the Dharma.
So,
So the real taste of the sugar cane is used as an example to talk about the real taste of the Dharma.
Oh, that day, my dear, is saying that today, quite the kind of thing is going to be a very good one. That day, and it is a third round, Mambo said. Sit the pain, the Moko, oh, that day, he will do those questions. Matapa in under Korean, oh, that day, Mambo question. Koba Sangita, Koba tell Hebi, Hebi to Hijani, Tang to Hingu Yosam, Munit in the Hingu, Koarima to Hingu Amaris. That is the Javi and Anni, Chiba Chude Kenita, Anni Chude Kayata, Yanka Yoris, Sundua.
And so he really, I think I probably did not really communicate this idea clearly to you last time. I was trying to get this idea to you. Where if we, you know, keep on listening to teachings, like hundreds of teachings, but never put into practice, then as we listen to teaching, we are so good with the words of the Dharma. Right? As soon as somebody says, impermanent, yeah, I know it, right? And so you kind of sense of like, as if hearing those words of the Dharma, we equate it with a really understanding of the Dharma. Right? Impermanence, yeah, I got it. But we just heard it, the word impermanence. We really didn't understand, realize what impermanence is. So if we don't put into practice the teachings we receive, then we might get terribly habituated into, this is a bad habit, by the way, we're not talking about a good one. We get into habit into listening to teachings, but never putting into practice. So that habit can be very detrimental. You know, it's just like as soon as the teacher talks, like, yeah, I know it. Yeah, that one I heard it. Yeah, this one I heard it. You know, as if we feel like we know it, but we really don't have the realization of the Dharma. So that is a terrible habit, to have.
Because they, tuve chang mang shi, chang mang shi, gom ji ge chang yong yu xie xie bin shi, tuve ji ju yi song ba dar sun duo. Tuve chang mang la gom chang yong.
So basically, if we are going to put a statistics here, right, then are the statistics of listening to the teaching and the statistics of our meditational practice, they must balance it out, right? If we listen to 100 times, we should have practiced meditation 100 times. But if our statistic on the listening, the laundry list is long, 100 times, but the practice list is really short, nothing, right, then we got a real problem. See that at least our practice, meditation and listening to teaching should match. The better would be more meditation, right?
당부 안에 도시 당부 퇴비 채는 세미나 중지 팬바터 나양스 당부 퇴비 전에 찍 아우 다때 가라서 찍 세미나 팬바진 다 주 퇴니 팜 마시나 된된도 대인주 상태 양내 양도 이래 셔파 당스 고브 마시나 대 예수스 안데 그래 마시나네 대 예수네 갑이네 다 아니 예수 퇴비 갑 할리 현점다 다 아니 다
So he says, like, you know, we really from the beginning very careful as we listen to teaching, because otherwise while we are listening to teaching, we might get a sense that, yeah, I do understand it, you know. But then if we don't repeatedly contemplate the meaning of the teaching and meditate on it, and then we get into that habit of not contemplating and meditating but listening to teaching, then after a while, we get disconnected from practice, contemplation, meditation, you know, and then that is a really terrible habit. You know, we like teaching, listen to, but somehow there's a disconnect between us and the practice, the contemplation and meditation. So here it is said that, you know, if we listen to or have listened to many other kinds of teachings based on other Dharma texts for a long time, we really got habituated in listening, right? Not practicing listening and listening. By listening to the Lamrim teaching, we might be able to bring ourselves around. Okay? So Lamrim teaching could become a very good antidote to really, how to say, put this new perspective on the need to practice. But now if we get into habituated, that terrible habit of listening to Lamrim teaching and not practicing, maybe this habit is incorrigible. We cannot correct it anymore. It's this really terrible thing.
Okay?
So here it is said that when we listen to teaching, doesn't matter how much we have listened to, a little bit, you know, a little more, a lot, but we must always, contemplate the teaching we have received and meditate on the teaching we have received. These three things, listening, tuba, contemplation, samba, and meditation, komba, they must always go together. You know, we have to bring these three things together. Do not divorce them. Do not separate them and split them up, you know, because they always need to come together. Listen to teaching, contemplate the teaching, and meditate on the teaching. So these three things should be applied to any amount of teaching, you know, we have listened to. Even if it means a little bit teaching we have listened to, we need to contemplate the meaning of the teaching so that we really understand what this little teaching we have received it really means. So once we have understood the meaning through contemplation, right, thinking, then we meditate on that realized meaning of the teaching. We call it ascertained meaning of the teaching. So we do meditation on that ascertained meaning of the teaching. He said that, you know, when I listen to teaching, I'm also contemplating and meditating on it. When I contemplate, I'm also listening and meditating. when I'm meditating, I'm also listening and contemplating. So basically he's saying that in each of these things he engages in, he brings the other two. So he's always keeping listening, contemplation, and meditation always together. Of course, there are a lot more things he said. I think what I just said, maybe we just based on that alone, we can think about how important it is to bring together those three things, listening, contemplation, and meditation. So one of the recognitions is to regard a Buddha, we call Tathagata, another term, as a sublime or valid person, for lack of a better word in English, Kivutamba, sublime. We could say holy, but the holy these days has become a little quite cheap sometimes, So it's a sublime realized being. To regard a Buddha or Tathagata as a sublime, Kivutamba, a sublime, hopefully that word means something more than holy, sublime person.
So that kon do sine lam tile ten yan do sine saje kuma to yin sine ngara zo kon yul do sine kan kan ten bat do nyam ne shi ya chim bi na saje kuma tel tu ba yo ma re sta.
So Shakyamuni Buddha, who is our original historical teacher, he taught everything based upon his own realizations, right? That means, he did it, right? It's like he has done everything. So based on his own realizations, he taught us how we can also become a Buddha like him. So if we follow his way or the journey or the path, then we will never be mistaken, because this should lead exactly to where, he ended up in his journey, the complete enlightened state. So we should be able to reach the same destination. So Buddha has become, we call Tseme Kibu, again the best English word ever produced by all the professors here, is a valid person, very authentic, valid, somebody who can never make any mistake. That's the sense of Tsema, okay? To be a valid person. In the great Buddhist treatise called Pramana Vartika, or a valid cognition treatise, Tsema. And in the second chapter, the whole chapter is really deals more with trying to establish that Buddha is, after all, the most authentic, valid person. Okay? Because that is based upon the path that he followed or cultivated, which led him to the enlightened state, and that's why he is a valid person. So one of the most important things about that whole spiritual path he cultivated is Dukje Gomla, that means he became a Buddha by way of cultivating infinite compassion to the infinite state. He cultivated the great compassion and brought it to the infinitude. He brought it to the fullest extent possible through the power of familiarization and intimacy. So when that happened, that's where he became the Buddha. So because his teaching is very valid and infallible, so therefore, because Buddha's teaching, you can investigate, and it's very authentic and infallible, so based upon the infallibility of his teaching, we say Buddha is great, Buddha is valid, okay, valid teacher.
So, Maranso, Kung Tuksedi, Nushi Shenkin, Tugu Amari, or that Kariki, Juntu Tenkin, Tugu Amari, Saji Kumdin, Kansumbi, 다 성비 가스 남도 산지 전에 강 송바티 뜨단 튕그 누나 가랑 냠슬라지 튕그 민도나 다 아니 냠슬라야 말다
So when it comes to the authenticity of the teaching, we rely upon what Buddha himself said or taught us. You know, we do not establish the authenticity of Buddha's teaching and the validity of Buddha based upon, because somebody with some extra clover in power said Buddha is great, okay? Or somebody said, you know, he did some miraculous power. So the miraculous power people said Buddha is great, okay? So now he is great. We don't use such reasonings. Those are not the reliable sources. We said Buddha is an enlightened being based upon, as we investigate the teaching, the path he followed, and investigate his teaching is authentic teaching, and it has the complete structure of the path, okay, leading to the enlightened state. So based upon his teaching, authenticity of his teaching, we establish the authenticity of a Buddha as a teacher. So in our case, like, you know, when we have a doubt about, okay, is this something I can put into practice or not, we always check with what did Buddha say. If what Buddha, with what, you know, the teaching we get, it agrees with, it does not contradict what Buddha said, then we can regard that part of the teaching as authentic and we can follow it. Okay? Otherwise, if something contradicts Buddha's teaching, then we should not follow that. Okay? That's how we talk about authenticity of the teaching. And also, I want to bring this important issue before you, that Buddha's teaching consists of what we call interpretable teaching and definitive teaching. Okay, the Tibetan terms are tangye. Tang means to interpret, interpretable teaching, and nye means definitive teaching. So in other words, we cannot say, you know what, Buddha said it, so I can take at the face value everything Buddha said it. Because everything Buddha said cannot be accepted literally. If we do that, we will run into trouble.
That theory is different.
So as most of you are familiar with the Heart Sutra, right? Pranjana Paramita Hridayam Sutra. So where we get many negative statements in this sutra, right? No eyes, no ears, no nose, no this, no that. Well, Buddha said it. Now, if we take it literally, no eyes, it does not make any sense, right? No nose, no ears. But that's what Buddha really didn't mean to say, you know? So such statements need to be interpreted. You know, there should be authentic interpretation of such statements because these are called, you know, we call interpretable teaching.
Mm.
So in some sense, we know we have to think about, we think about eyes, the organs we're talking about. If we say there are eyes which exist conventionally, but then we can say maybe there are some kind of eyes that don't exist. So eyes which do exist and eyes which don't exist. Maybe that's the distinction we need to know.
Yes.
So when such says there are no eyes, what they really should mean is there are no objectively existent eyes. There are no eyes which exist from their own side and in of themselves. Okay, there's no independently existent, objectively existent eyes, but there are eyes. So we can talk about eyes which do exist and eyes which don't exist. So the point I'm trying to make is, you know, Buddha's teaching really need to be investigated. There are things which can be accepted exactly as Buddha said it. We call definitive words of the teachings. There are things Buddha said it which require authentic interpretation. Those are interpretable teachings of the words of a Buddha. Buddha himself made it clear. He said, you know, don't accept everything I said it at the face value.
No.
So there's this famous statement, you know, Buddha made, which he said, "Kelon takam kenam ki, all monastic or the, you know, learned bhikshus and wise people, right? Sekche talve sekshindu, just as a goldsmith tests the gold, whether the gold is a real gold or a fake one, through three different ways, right? This is the ancient way of doing it, which is you can burn it, then you can tell whether it's a real gold or a fake one that melts completely. Or you can rub it against something and you can find it out. Or you can cut it. Right? So through burning, cutting and rubbing it, a goldsmith can tell whether this is a true gold or not. And based upon those tests, the goldsmith says, okay, this is the real one and it's authentic and this is the fake one. In the same way, Sekche Talwe Sekshen Do Lepartala Ngayika, you should investigate thoroughly, lekwata completely, my words, my teaching, he said. Okay? And then Lawar Chai, based upon thorough investigation, accept it. Kuichir mean, not just because you respect me. Don't accept my words out of respect for me, but accept it based upon thorough investigation. Now that's a lot of things to talk about. Just as a goldsmith used the three ways to test the gold, in the same way, we could use three types of valid cognitions, samasum. Okay, now we are not probably going to go into all those things. We need to use three valid cognitions to test the authenticity of Buddha's teaching. If these three valid cognitions establish that Buddha, what Buddha said is true and valid, then accept it, it's valid. If they do not establish it authentically, then it's a different matter. So of course the three valid cognition is quite complex matters, and I don't think we could, talk about here this time. The point I want to make is that it is through authentic reasoning, valid reasoning, we call it junzen, the rational, that we try to establish the authenticity of Buddha's teaching. So what it basically means, he says, Buddha said X, Y, Z. Why did he say it? When did he say it? What's the reason behind it? What does it really mean, X, Y, Z? Right? So then we look at the overall teaching of the Buddha, right? This is what Buddha said. Why did he say it? What was his intention behind? How does this teaching fit into overall teaching of the Buddha? He said something else differently. So how do these things match up? So this is all based upon reasoning, the valid reasoning and rationale. Okay? So the three valid cognitions are part of this reasoning.
That didn't read. Rangi any chewing bitsenas lava chewing bitsena any rang jula jutola santan rang sim santani nyingres karezna chewing sung but the rang the same nanju same chagota thing but the zogo and the te. That's his shagres.
So as we listen to teaching here, the emphasis is we should also check with our way of thinking. Is my way of thinking it accords with the teaching, okay? Or is there a disparity between what I think usually and what the teaching tells me, okay? So this is very important to find out. Is it the match between, if you like, our way of thinking and the teaching?
Pena the rangale and the dombale ki takwa yimit zo melong na na ta ni ta yimit ta gerba te na ye ke kyu ni because rang sem gu ta de kyu sung ban kyu ni sung ba ta rang sem ni bote tung go min de ta sem de shen ye ba tu tong ta tong ki tong go res.
To use another metaphor, just as we use mirror, to check whether I need to clean my face or any spots on my face and all those things, right? Because once our face is reflected in the mirror, then we can say, okay, this is what I have got on the face, okay? And then we, you know, clean up, right? This is the whole point of looking into the mirror. In the same way, we use the Buddha's teaching like a mirror and let our behavior and thoughts reflect into the teaching, right? See, the teaching, if we, what we say is, you know what? You know, what I'm thinking and doing does not accord with what Buddha said it, then we need to modify our way of thinking and behavior. If what we think and what we do go well with what Buddha said it, if this mirror says, okay, you're fine, clean, then that's good news. Just give you one example. You know, what we learn from Buddha's teaching is about cultivating, you know, in the first place, what is great love and great compassion, for example. So great compassion is defined as a state of mind wishing all sentient beings to be free from suffering and discourses. Okay? So this is what great compassion is. We learn about it from the teaching. Now in our everyday life, when we see any suffering human being or a sentient being, right, then if we can think that, you know, how nice it would be if this particular being, as well as many other beings who are suffering in a similar way, are really free from their suffering. You know, may they be free from suffering. Then, you know, our teaching and our way of thinking are really in sync, you know, in sync with each other, right? So this is what we should try to do. So when we cultivate great love for sentient beings, we really try, we sincerely wish all beings to be happy, to be endowed with happiness. Okay? Now we have certain experience, not the great love, but in this regard, like, you know, people we really feel very close to and dear to us, right? We always wish them to be happy, to succeed in what they do. And they really do succeed, we are all the more happy, right? We say, oh, that's great. That's what we really want them to be happy. And we rejoice in that. So in the same way, you know, we should be able to extend that same attitude towards other sentient beings. When they are really doing well, instead of becoming jealous of them or envious of them or kind of being indifferent to them, we truly rejoice. This is what we want everybody to be happy. Now they are really happy because of their own efforts or whatever the case may be. So we become all the more happy because sentient beings are getting exactly what we wish them, you know, to be. They got the happiness. Okay? So this is how we cultivate a great love for sentient beings. So after all, we have got this, you know, karmic connection with all sentient beings. You know, why we should really feel grateful to them is because they have all been our kind mom and dad. Yeah, all sentient beings have been our mothers and fathers. And they have been very kind to us, taking care of us. And so we should be grateful to them for those kindnesses. And when we feel gratitude, you know, in regard to them, then of course that sense of gratitude prevents us from harming them, right? If we're really grateful to them for their kindnesses, So we will not think of harming them or hurting them.
So that Sanji re ta dne ge ani ti shavi na ta Sanji la me bi ni ge ta ani shamba ta ta den den la den de ni shangyu sen ran yu shem go res.
So based upon that kind of a ground, right, you know, we see the karmic connection between ourselves and all sentient beings. They have become all our fathers and mothers, very kind to us. And now we would like to repay their kindness. And we feel gratitude to them. So therefore, we don't hurt them in any way. So based on this kind of connection and understanding, now we can truly wish them to be happy, which is called great love. We can truly wish them to be free from suffering, which is called great compassion. So from these great love and compassion, we cultivate bodhicitta or altruism, seeking complete enlightenment for the benefit of all other sentient beings.
Gobaludu ke tenen sunyer kare se te umar ji chon na sunyer zuz sumjas ta pena mi mi sumja de de kele pe ni si tu de ni re tu ni re tu ni ni se ne pe chwa jan ni se se bale shamba yu zum gomba ji pen che re se sing ye tang ye bi shamba yu zai gon pen che re ga nan dus
great realized Indian Buddhist sage Arya Nagarjuna in his precious garland or Ratna Avali said, he said that if we were to cultivate great love even for a moment, it would be much more meritorious than if we were going to treat 300 people, twice a meal for a day. That seems like quite a lot of people we are treating, right? But if you cultivate great love even for a moment, that is much more meritorious than the merit we could gain from treating a large number of people with, food twice a day. The four immeasurables called seme, see, right? That term itself means that if we cultivate these attitudes even for a moment, the merit, positive energy we gain is immeasurable. That's the sense. Okay? So when we cultivate immeasurable love, which is like we wish, countless sentient beings to be happy or to be endowed with happiness, how nice it would be if all these numberless, sentient beings are happy. Just even for a moment, that attitude can create immeasurable positive energy. That's a sense. Or that if we say, how nice it would be if all these sentient beings are free from suffering, which is a great compassion. Okay? Or we say that, how nice it would be if all sentient beings find true happiness that is free of any kind of what we call contamination, suffering, and everything, which is we call joy, in other words, immeasurable joy. And or we say that how nice it would be if sentient beings find sense of equanimity, is it without, free of attachment to some, anger or hatred towards others, and indifferent attitude towards other people. If they are in a state of equanimity, balanced state of mind, free of all those things, right? So then we accumulate immeasurable positive energy. So that's why the four immeasurables are called immeasurables, because we can gain immeasurable merits by cultivating them. So in conclusion today, I want to once more remind all of ourselves, including myself, that it doesn't matter how much we know or we have listened to teaching a little bit, a little more, a lot more, whatever the case may be. But when we practice, even for a few minutes, make sure that our practice is pure, from the beginning to the end. That our motivation right from the beginning is pure. When we do the practice, it is pure. The middle section is pure. And when we do the dedication, it's a pure dedication. So the beginning, middle, and the end, even for a few minutes, everything is done just meticulously and perfectly. Okay? That's very important. Even if it means a little bit of practice we do, but we should do it, you know, purely and completely like that.
Honest. That's the one thing I said.
So what I basically did today was, you know, I talked about all of these things before, but I somehow tried to kind of bring them together and re-explain these things. So it's like a, more like a review session, you know.
Okay. That. And then I thought Chuchin should be given all the tenny, Sanji Temer, but you touch the Nepat. Joy, you know, it's a bit in the ship, but a month's good champion was too in the middle of your water. Chu drinking a show of woman, she twenty shower is in the robot. Getting to come to the game, the Mutimic told to the candy, twinching the sort of them, maybe do you want.
Let us dedicate our positive energy of marriage for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great sublime holy beings may they live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. Last but not least, we dedicate our collective marriage for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all become Buddhas quickly.
Thank you.